Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. MotorWeek is made possible by RockAuto.com. Here's your host, John Davis.
Welcome, everyone, to MotorWeek's podcast number 64. Thanks for joining us here on Studio C at MotorWeek headquarters. And around our desks today is Road Test producer and Two Wheelin' reporter Brian Robinson.
Hello, John.
And Road Test writer Brandon Holthouse.
Hey, that's me.
And we're going to be talking about a variety of things, as well as getting into our mailbag. We're going to look at the new Honda CR-V, the new diesel utility from Mercedes-Benz, and, of course, an oldie but a goodie that's been redone, the Toyota Camry Hybrid. And let's start now with the CR-V. We talked on our last podcast before this one about new unveilings at the LA Auto Show, and of course, one of the most important unveilings was the new CR-V. This new generation CR-V has been widely expected. It is certainly more evolutionary in design than revolutionary. Having said that, let me turn it over to my associates here for any more comments.
Yeah, I can sum up the CR-V with basically same size, a little better looking, and slower. That's pretty much all you need to know about the new CR-V. If you liked it before, but there were a couple things you didn't like the way the rear seats folded, which is much better now, and you didn't like that it had a 5-speed transmission, it's now got a 6-speed. Other than that, and also the used to have the open floor plan up front, no big center console, but it does have a center console. Other than that, it's more of what you loved in the CR-V. Best fuel economy in the class, 22 city, 30 highway for the all-wheel drive, which is very good. And
do you think it deserved a big unveiling at an auto show?
Well, it, as one of the original compact recreation vehicles, that and RAV4, I guess was the, RAV4 was probably the first one.
RAV4 was the first, the first unitized frame, small.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, and it's always. It's been the number one seller most of its years that it's been available, right, between that and the Ford Escape.
It's a big deal. Yeah. I mean, it's a high-volume vehicle for Honda. If they weren't going to showcase it, they wouldn't showcase anything.
Yeah, but, like I say, it's got a 6-speed transmission, but and the engine is the same. It's a couple more horsepower, but the thing is really geared towards fuel economy. You could tell that was a big priority. We drove it in some not really mountainous roads, but hilly roads, and it really struggles. You got to get on it and let it kick down a couple gears before you can get moving out. I wouldn't, you know, it's something we're going to have to get used to. I mean, that's kind of the way of the world now.
Less power, higher fuel economy, and it does over. It's rated at what, 31 miles per gallon?
For the two-wheel drive, 31 highway. Yeah.
For the all-wheel drive fans, they always had one of the better all-wheel drive systems there, what they call their real-time all-wheel drive, and they have redone that. It's less hydraulic, more like electronically actuated, and you don't have to have wheel slip before it engages. Actually, when you're starting off from a stop, you have some power to all four wheels, and I think people will actually like that better. But they still maintained it as it's still a pretty capable vehicle, where a lot of the all-wheel drive systems are not.
Yeah, I think it's like you said, they're one of the best all-wheel drive systems to begin with, and I think it's gotten a little better. Two other things I want to mention: the load floor, which was already low. It's amazing. You got to check it out how low. When you open
how
the
low
rear,
can you go?
Yeah, when you open the rear tailgate, you have to reach down to put stuff into the trunk.
Wow.
I mean, it is – I have no – it's like a engineering miracle. I think they redesigned the rear suspension so that it could be a totally flat floor, and that it's incredible how low it is. And the other thing was I can't remember.
Move on. You're doing one of those brain freezes on us. Brandon, a lot of new compact SUVs coming out, a new Ford Escape, the CX-5 from Mazda. From what you've seen of the CR-V, do you think it's up to these new challenges?
I think, like Brian said, it's kind of just evolving. It's not going to revolutionize anything. I think people will still have it as a top contender in that bracket, but again, it's not going to turn any more heads than it already has.
It's fair enough.
Oh, I remember the other thing. No push-button start, which I thought was weird. I mean, that's a big thing. I talk to people, you know, especially female buyers. They love to have the key fob in their purse and just be able to get in the car and push-button. And it's not even going to be an option on the CR-V, which I thought was a little weird.
What worries me about the CR-V and the Civic and what we've seen in the last year from Honda is that, remember when Detroit was on its downward spiral, their attitude, and this goes back a long time, their attitude was the public likes what we're giving them now, so we're going to keep giving them the same thing with minor improvements. And I'm worried that Honda has fallen into that. It saves you money when you don't have to spend a lot of money on new technology, because when you look at stuff going on by their rivals, not just the Koreans, but the domestics and other Japanese firms, things are accelerating and new technology is what people want. And I hope they're realizing that and are going to respond.
Yeah, I talked to some of their engineers about it because I thought it was – I hear a lot about people that want to buy a certain vehicle and they don't because they just don't have the features that they want. And that's one that I hear a lot of. But and they said their reasoning was – not sure if this is true or not, but just that push-button starts and keyless entry systems are somewhat problematic. And they just don't want to deal with having problems. They want their vehicle to be perfect. And Honda buyers expect their vehicles to be perfect. And that's one thing that could go wrong that they don't really want to go wrong. So,
you know, I've heard those same comments before. Yeah, yeah. They're not new. And it didn't hold true last time.
Yeah, you're Honda. You know, I'm sure you can make a flawless push button.
Well, they're an engineering-oriented company. Yeah, so. Okay, let's move on to another company noted for its engineering, and that's Mercedes-Benz. We all had a chance recently to try out the new M-Class, specifically the ML350 BlueTEC turbocharged diesel V6. Pretty darned impressive midsize SUV, even though it's not inexpensive. What did you guys think of the BlueTEC?
I really liked the BlueTEC. It drove really smooth. The seats, again, were comfortable. It's got a great look on the outside. One thing I do have to nitpick with it, though, is the infotainment screen in the center stack. It's not as smart.
The Mercedes command system.
Yeah, it's just not as smart as you would hope to be. It's not a touch screen.
Which is amazing at this day and age.
I mean, you've got touch screens everywhere. That's the thing, the standard thing. First time I sat in it, I started hitting the screen and realizing that was not what we were supposed to do. And it has, like, the mouse by the shifter and everything. And it feels like you're in a nice car, but you're using, like, Windows 95 on a computer.
It seems to be a German thing almost. They seem to be lagging a little behind sort of the trend as far as in some of the interior touchscreen controls.
Yeah, I didn't maybe have as much a problem with that as everyone else. But the big thing with the ML is they updated the interior big time.
I think much nicer.
Ever since it first came out, people have kind of panned it for having a cheap utilitarian interior. This one, it's up a huge notch. I wouldn't say it's perfect yet. I still got some work to do, but it is much better.
Well, let's talk about the motor. Come on now. You know, this is a 400-plus pound-feet of torque diesel V6. I mean, it just moved.
It's smooth and quiet, typical German diesels. I mean, most people would not even know it's a diesel.
They move barely hear the clatter.
They moved the AdBlue adder to the fuel behind the fuel door.
Thank goodness. Nice. You don't have to go into the wheel well for it. I think that it's a nice improvement, and it certainly was comfortable to put some miles on it in. I agree with basically everything everybody said.
It's solid, and it's based on the same chassis as the Grand Cherokee.
That's right.
Originally in Durango, back when it was still Daimler Chrysler is when they started developing this thing. So,
which I think bodes well for the Grand Cherokee. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's one of the reasons why it's selling so well. Another car that recently was in our fold and one that gets a lot of publicity. Everybody knows that the Toyota Camry is all new for 2012, and that includes the Toyota Camry Hybrid. So here's the new addition. Now, the Camry itself, when we talked about it earlier, you know, we were all fairly underwhelmed by the fact that it's nice looking, but it doesn't match things like the Hyundai Sonata in style inside and out. And it's gotten a lot of criticisms because it's tends to be a little bit too, I won't say boring, but too much appliance-like like Camrys have been in the past. Along comes the Camry Hybrid, though, and you have to stop and say, all of that other reasoning is fine, but a car this big that seats five adults comfortably, that no matter what you do to it, is delivering nearly 40 miles per gallon and is comfortable and you know it's reliable, wow. It's like that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Everyone loves to hate on the Camry, including me. I can't tell me how many times I've said I hate the Camry. But, you get in the thing and it's immediately comfortable, and you're just cruising along, and it's so relaxing to drive. And before you know it, you're home. It's It's a very comfortable, well-built car. Hybrid system works seamlessly. Like you said, it's almost impossible to do less than mid-30s.
That's right.
And, man, it's pretty impressive.
Brandon? Right.
I know on my ride home, I think I did hit low 30s just because I do –
You that much of a hot shoe?
No, I don't think that much.
Walter Mitty is exposed.
But, you know, I have a lot of just stop-and-go traffic on the way home. Not a lot of highway driving on the way home. But I do like what they've added to the hybrid of the Camry, where they've added a lot of chrome on the front around the fog lights.
And more bling.
Yeah, I do like that, so people know that you're driving a hybrid. And if you're going to pay extra for the hybrid, why not show it off a little bit? But everything worked well inside. It's silent, pretty much. It's, again, I'm a big stickler with road noise, and this was pretty quiet.
It was very quiet.
Yeah.
It's about $3,500 more than a comparably equipped Camry with a four-cylinder engine, and given its performance, I think that's not an unrealistic amount of money.
Reasonable.
Very
reasonable. I was surprised at how low it was.
All the Camry prices are pretty much less or the same as last year. So if you're looking for a family car and you basically can afford around the mid-20s, the Camry LE trimmed hybrid is pretty impressive.
Yeah, on the styling, I'm not sure I agree.
You know, like the chrome.
Yeah, I think it's overreaching a little bit. I mean, to me, the Camry is an appliance, as I mentioned. It's a really good appliance, and I'm not saying it should look like a refrigerator, but it, I think they're kind of promising more than they deliver with the styling.
Let's move on now to pardon?
I was just trying to start an argument. You know?
Okay. Well,
sorry. No, let's move on.
No, I think you want to respond? We certainly want to give equal time here.
Yeah. I would say maybe not a refrigerator. Maybe they're trying to do like a microwave oven.
Gotcha.
Not a toaster oven.
Right.
Microwave. All right. Can I move on now?
Please do.
Okay.
Please do.
Moving on now to our lightning round where our Motor Week panelists. Are you mahogany or anyway, mahogany or
faux
beech or faux?
Faux.
Anyway, we all get a chance to share our opinions on some topic that's making the headlines. We have 2 minutes, and at the end of that 2 minutes, you will hear this bell from our producer, Michelle Parker. An advocacy group, I have trouble with that word, an advocacy group for diesel cars is asking the federal government for technology-neutral policy making on fuel efficiency, citing what it calls unfair incentives, encouraging the development and adoption of hybrid technology, and I might add electric cars, at the expense of diesels is their merit to their request. Let me set the stage on this real quickly.
Please do.
We all know that there are a lot of tax incentives for electric or electrified vehicles. The new government fuel economy laws, which are targeting mid-50s for the whole fleet, it looks like, you know, hybrids and electrics are going to play a huge part in there, and there's incentives to go along with it. And Volkswagen, among others, who make very good diesel cars, are saying it's unfair. They're able to achieve those goals with diesel powertrains, but they're not getting any kind of break on cost, and diesels do cost more than normal cars. So having set the stage, have they got it right, given that that Americans really don't buy a lot of diesel vehicles yet? Do they have a right to complain? Is it an unfair playing field? Does it stifle technology? Whatever.
Well, this question is probably way above my pay grade as well as intelligence grade. But, of course, they have a right to complain. That's an American right. We all complain about everything. The diesel technology has been around forever, and obviously it's progressed a lot, certainly recently. Diesels are great. Electricity, electric-powered cars, hybrid technology, it's a new technology. Maybe it does need some help. I don't know.
Brandon, any comment?
I would say that they do have a point where if diesel is up there and they can achieve what the government's trying to achieve, then they should have a cut of that. But at the same time, we're at a time where the economy isn't doing great, so you have to go with the vehicles that are going to give you the best value at a certain price.
I think it's an air pollution problem. The government is trying, obviously, to discourage air pollution of any type, and they think that car emissions are a problem, and they'd rather have emissions at a power plant where they can control it better, which is one of the reasons I think they've been not particularly promoting any kind of technology and internal combustion engines and looking at alternatives. On the other hand, that's all nice pie in the sky policy making. The reality is that electric cars are far from being affordable. It's going to probably be a long time before we see millions and millions of them on the street. And here's an available technology that has been underutilized in this country because we price diesel fuel higher than gasoline. So I think personally they deserve some help and should be put on if they can match the same kind of mileage returns that we're seeing with some of the cars like the Volt, so if, you know, that basically are not 100% electric, then why don't they have the same kind of incentives?
Well, the mileage is there, but as you say, they're not clean. They're not clean vehicles.
So well, they're cleaner. They're certainly there. The clean diesels are certainly cleaner, but no, they're not as clean as clean can be. No. So I guess we didn't answer that question, but it was a good round table on it. Let's move on now to our Motor Week mailbag. And this question comes from Kenny. It's that time of year again. What's the best way to clear snow off your vehicle? Is it okay to use brooms or cardboard? And I'll add shovels. It seems like those things would damage the finish. Well, besides saying you're correct that they could damage the finish, what would you guys recommend?
Well, I'd like to see Kenny come in and demonstrate the cardboard method.
Yeah. Oh, no, I've tried that at the airport.
How do you do
when
that?
The car's you basically, you know, it's a struggle, but it's better than nothing is when you've left that the ice scraper at home.
Oh, I use a broom. I would say just make sure it's a clean, decent broom. Don't grab one out of your garage that's got ice frozen in it or something.
Try and get something that's got some fairly soft bristles.
You can buy certain ice scrapers that actually does – there's a bristle side on one side that you could use.
I'll tell you what I use. I stopped some years ago at a truck stop on the interstate, and they were selling these very soft car washing brushes for the side of a semi. And they have a screw hole like you could use for a painter's pole. So I took it home and put it on an old painter's pole, and that enables – and it's very soft. So I can – bring the snow off the top and off the hood of the cars with this soft bristle brush and yet be far enough away from the vehicle that I don't get the snow all over me.
Well, maybe you should go show Kenny how it's done.
Well, sure I think we just did. But that's one solution. It's
really,
not, it's not the
best solution is just to, on your the driver's side of the windshield, just do a small hole that's barely big enough to see out of. And then crank your defrosters to max and hit the road.
Right.
And don't do anything to the rear window,
I see it every day.
Right? Oh, it's amazing, you know, people peering out of these portholes.
Yeah, or even sticking their head out the window.
Yeah.
So, Kenny, whatever you do, don't take that piece of advice from Mr. Robinson.
Sorry.
But there are a number of – do not use a shovel. We know someone who tried that, it was fairly disastrous.
And be careful when you're using a shovel either in your driveway or if you have street parking, because if you're close to your car with a shovel – and you just want to get it done, it's very easy to nick the car, which I've done many, many times.
I guess we're all telling you things that we've done in the past that aren't terribly
good
advice.
Trial by error.
But something soft, maybe with a handle, and good luck, Kenny. All right, that brings to a close, and thank goodness, this Motor Week podcast number 64. For all of us in the studio, Brian Robinson and Brandon Holthouse and myself, John Davis, and our audio engineer, Jim Bigwood, our podcast creator, Bob Mixter, and, of course, our producer, Michelle Parker, the lady with the bell. There you go, on cue. Thank you very much for listening. And remember, Motor Week can be seen on most public television stations across the country. Also on the Velocity cable network. You can catch up on all of our latest road tests at our website, motorweek.org. And until next time, I'm John Davis. For all of us at Motor Week, thanks very much for watching and listening to Motor Week.
You've been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, Television's original automotive magazine. Motorweek is made possible by rockauto.com. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at motorweek.org. And watch Motorweek, television's longest-running automotive series, each week on your local PBS station.